You're listening to Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning
on 710 WOR.
Morning, everyone, on what promises to be quite a rainy Thursday around here and cold tomorrow. Michael Riedel has the day off. Noam Layden is here in his stead. Our big three stories this morning. Wow, just 5 days to go now. That's it. We'll have the latest from the campaign trail as Donald Trump and Joe Biden both are heading to Florida today. Also in the big three, well, Anonymous has revealed himself. This is the guy who wrote anti-Trump resistance from inside the administration. His name is Miles Taylor. He's a former chief of staff at the Department of Homeland Security. Of course, the president calls him a sleazebag now. And rounding out the big three, well, according to the New York Post, the mayor is trying to kill the Mets sale to billionaire Steve Cohen, which might get approved by baseball owners tomorrow. City Hall is denying the story, but, well, the Post is hanging its head on or hanging its hat on the issue that Citi Field sits on city land. So the mayor has the ultimate call on all this and supposedly isn't happy with the former problems that Steve Cohen's hedge fund had, Noam. So perhaps it's a story. Perhaps it's a Post fabrication. This will certainly sort itself out in the next 24 to 48 hours, I think.
You know, I think the mayor just doesn't like rich guys. That's what it comes down to. So, but I think you're right. There's no way he can block this deal. Steve Cohen will be owner of the Mets by the end of the week.
Well, that'll make Mets fans happy. We're joined now by the mayor of Jersey City, Steve Fulop. Now, we had him on because there's some real serious issues going on in New Jersey with spikes. But, Mayor, since we have you and since Noam Layden is a resident of your fair city, we were wondering before if Noam's the most famous Jersey Cityite. is that funny, huh?
Yeah, it is funny.
You know, top 50, maybe?
Oh, whoa, baby!
That's cold.
Top 50? All right, give us one. Give us two.
You know, we have a bunch of Giants that live here. I remember, like, 3 years ago, Dwight Gooden was living here. You have some people that are on, like, TV shows, like, just regular ABC, NBC, nothing like main stars, but a lot of, like, people involved in that. So I guess I'd put Noam in maybe top 30, 20, you know?
Oh, wait. It's getting better all the time, Noam.
Wait, you're saying B stars from TV shows are bigger than me? It sounds like I'm in the top 10.
I just think the mayor's laugh is very telling here, Noam.
It is.
He doesn't have to say anything. Just the laugh says it all.
He should worry. I'm a voter. Remember, I'm a voter in Jersey City.
That's right. I'm not just a resident. I'm a voter.
Top five.
Top five. It's getting better all the time. Well, I'm top five where I live. We got some famous entrepreneurs who live out here. Anyway. Mayor Fulop from Jersey City, you got towns like Newark and Hoboken nearby to you that are throwing on all these extra restrictions and closing down bars, but you're really resisting it. How come?
All right. I mean, I'll start by just saying and pointing out that we were literally the first in the region to put any restrictions on in March. We were early when we saw the pandemic coming, one of the first in the country. So, you know, we haven't been gun shy about putting restrictions in place. It's just, this time around, we know more how the virus is transmitted. It's not like it's only transmitted at night, so curfew necessarily won't be helpful, but you'll cripple these businesses if you put them through a second time of closing. So, you know, we're reluctant to do that. So from a local economy standpoint and from a mental health standpoint, we're going to really hold off on that.
You know, I've been watching the lines in Hoboken of people waiting to get the, you know, testing for the virus. And they're huge. I mean, I couldn't believe how many people are in line. And that's right next door to you. So doesn't that worry you?
I mean, we've seen a spike here. There's no question about it. But the question is, how do you really deal with it? So if you put more restrictions and shut down businesses, the likelihood of them reopening them ever is not going to happen. I mean, last time you had CARES Act funds and support systems, you're not getting that from the federal government this time, or it doesn't look like it. So you're really going to cripple the local economy. So we're conscious of the spike in numbers, and we're watching the hospitalization rate, but it feels like it's different this time with regards to fatalities and hospitals knowing more and treatment a little better. So not to say that we won't make changes, but right now we're not going to jump the gun and just say, look, we're going to put curfews and restrictions on these businesses and basically put them out of business.
We're on with Mayor Steve Phillip from Jersey City. And, Mayor, can you give us an idea of what the numbers are? What is going on in your town?
Yeah, I mean, they've gone down to as low as, you know, mid to low single digits from a peak when you're talking of April, March of, you know, 200 cases per day. You know, now we're probably in the 12 to 15, 18. So definitely creeping up. And we see from the contact tracing that most of that is really attributable to, you know, people having social gatherings in their homes, inviting friends and family over and maybe, you know, lowering the guard a little bit. So we're just trying to educate people a little bit more about best practices. But, you know, like I said earlier, I think a heavy-handed approach on businesses is going to be counterproductive long term.
One of my kids, Gabe, came home from playing basketball the other day, and he had stepped in dog poop for like the 15th time because dogs have been relieving them, or owners have been letting
that
their dogs
Gabe,
relieve them.
Gabe is your son?
Oh, you got the letter? Because he told me he was going to put a letter in your mailbox, and I said, yeah, you know, you got the mayor right there. You might as well petition
you know
him.
He wrote a long letter specifically about that. He dropped it in the mailbox. And he put an email address. And yesterday morning, I had some time. So I said, you know what? I'm going to email this kid back. And, you know, because I'm happy that he's involved civically. And I had no idea he was your son. So yeah. I wrote him a letter. I wrote him an email back. He'll tell you about that, I'm sure. And then he wrote me back just saying, thank you. If there's anything more I can do, please let me know. So, oh, look at that.
Huh. Wait, so there's nothing you can do about that, right? I mean, I would think that if dog owners, this is everywhere, it's not just Jersey City, but if dog owners are letting their dogs relieve themselves anywhere, that's always been like this urban problem that you can't get around, is it?
Yeah. What I told him was like the solution really is, you know, neighbors correcting neighbors. So it's kind of shaming your neighbor if you see him doing that, because it's not like we're going to use police or we're going to catch somebody in the act. So if you see somebody who's, let's say, using a basketball court as a dog run, the best thing to do is just politely say something to them. They'll probably feel uncomfortable and they won't do it going forward. So
what if I videotape it and send it to you? Can you do something about it?
I mean, do we really want to go through that? You're really going to take that type of effort?
I don't know. Just seems like a fun thing to do because it's so obnoxious, you know.
Hey, Mayor, but when you emailed Noam's son and said stop putting letters in my mailbox, stop bothering me. I thought that was a little rude on your part, Mayor.
I mean, you know, I'm really surprised. I was really impressed. He wrote a long letter, and it was a thoughtful letter. And he said, you know, I'm a student in XYZ school, and this is something that bothered me. And so, you know, being that you had a student who was, you know, taking the time to, you know, be civically engaged and reach out to the mayor, even though it's not the best format to do that, drop something in the mailbox. I say, you know what, I'm going to take some time and respond to this guy. And so I had no idea it was your son. It's actually a really good thing that he did. So
there you go.
Good for him.
Civic responsibilities and politics at their best. Thank you, Mayor Steve Phillip, Jersey City.
Hey,
appreciate a few minutes.
Thank you. Take care, man.
All right. That's a funny story. How old's your son, Noam?
17.
Wow. Yeah. Well, he's going to be a future mayor there. Coming up next, Whitney Houston makes history, but she's been dead for 8 years. And at 7:35, former New York Governor David Paterson joins us.
It's Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning.
On the Voice of New York.
710 WOR.
Well, a lot of things happened 8 years ago. We were talking about 8 years ago today, Noam Layden with Sandy, and it was 8 years ago Whitney Houston died.
Really?
It's amazing how time goes, huh?
Yeah, that is amazing. 8 years ago already? Wow, that really seems like yesterday.
Yeah, that was also 2012. And what's interesting about Whitney Houston is she just set a record. She just earned her third diamond album. Now, a diamond album means 10 million copies have been sold. So I'm guessing platinum is 1 million, and this is 10 million for diamond. It's the third diamond album. She's the first black artist, they're saying, to achieve that feat. And this album that just achieved diamond is from 1987, called Whitney.
Yeah, well, that was the debut album. I mean, I remember it well. It was huge, and she was huge. I'm finding it hard to believe that Michael Jackson's not on that list, though. You'd think he would have gotten there before Whitney Houston did, as the first African-American to sell that many albums, but maybe she's the first. But, you know, what's devastatingly sad about her is that she met Bobby Brown. I don't know if you followed all this, but she met Bobby Brown, who she then married, one of the singers from New Edition, and that was it, man. Her life went downhill from there. You know, it was clear that he was some sort of drug addict. He got her into it, and she never could come back from that. She tried a bunch of times, and it just never happened. And then, you know, sadly, she died in that bathtub in the hotel. It was the night of the Grammy Awards, if I'm not mistaken.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. Hey, we should check that out. Yeah, you would think that Michael Jackson would have had some diamond albums, too. But here's the thing with this Whitney album from 1987. The album had 4 number one hits. That's a hell of an album. You want to hear them?
Yeah,
well,
sure.
You can hear them anyway. Know them. Here you go. All the way back to 1987, that hit number one. Also from the same album, Whitney. Well, this one hit number one. Well, that was the number one hit, as was this one from the same album. You know, I'm getting sadder and sadder just listening to this.
Yeah.
I mean, what
amazing talent. Oh, my gosh, that song
is
so
incredible.
You know,
and by the way, this was her second album. Her first album was titled Whitney Houston. Her second album was Whitney. So her first album was in 1985. This one was 86.
And her third album was W. No, I'm kidding. All right, here's the here's the fourth number one song from that now Diamond album. Unbelievable. So now it's a diamond, and Natalie checked it out. You had a great point about Michael Jackson. What'd you find out about his diamond albums now?
So it looks like he had 2 U.S. diamond albums, and the first one was Thriller. How can you
sure
not? And then the second album was the album right after that called Bad. But I was surprised Off the Wall, which was another huge hit for him. Didn't receive it yet. So, you know, he still has time. People are still listening. And it seems like all these old songs are coming back now.
I mean, that's unbelievable. I got to hear this one again.
She's like huge again.
Right. Stevie Nicks is huge again. Yeah. Listen, I got to hear this one again. Such a fitting testimony to her life. Didn't we almost have it all?
Yep.
Oh, there's news about another great singer. Clive Davis is working on a biopic of Aretha Franklin, and now that's been updated.
Jennifer Hudson going to star as Aretha Franklin in this biopic. And what's really cool about this is maybe a little more than a decade ago, Jennifer Hudson met Aretha Franklin, and this biopic has been in the work for years. And she said to her, "I want you to play me. You are the perfect person to play me." And then, of course, Aretha Franklin died a number of years ago. And so she is. She's playing Aretha Franklin. But now, because of the pandemic, you know, you can't get a whole lot done. So the movie was supposed to come out earlier. Now it's not going to be out at the earliest next summer, August. They're saying August 13th for a release date. But this was the one flick, because there was a couple in the works, that Aretha Franklin herself signed off on and even picked the star of. And she said that Jennifer Hudson's life story in some ways matched hers, and she said, "This is the perfect person to play me."
Well, that's a movie I want to see. Here's Aretha. Now, this is from the trailer for the movie, and here's Jennifer Hudson.
What you, baby, I got. Ooh. What you need. Ooh. You know I got it. Ooh. All I'm asking is for respect.
I'll tell you, that's Jennifer Hudson, that's good casting. I'll tell you right there for Aretha Franklin.
You know, the other thing about Jennifer Hudson and Whitney Houston, what they have in common is they were both discovered in church. You know, they were church singers. And can you imagine listening to these two women singing in church? It must have been unbelievable. And they were both picked out of their church choirs. And that's how they became so famous.
Can you say Clive Davis?
Yeah.
Michael Riedel's buddy? Yeah, for sure. All right, news time at 7:30. Good morning, Joe Bartlett.
Good morning, Len. 5 days away from Election Day, and if you believe the fake polls, Joe Biden is opening his lead.
The fake polls? Did I hear that correctly?
Well, yeah. The president has his own polls. He says he's going to do much better than the fake polls, okay?
Okay.
The president held a pair of rallies in Arizona, warning Joe Biden would shut down the country if he's elected. Joe Biden, meanwhile, is blasting President Trump for leaving some of his supporters out in the cold.
Hundreds of people, including old Americans and children, were stranded in sub-zero freezing temperatures for hours. Several folks ended up in the hospital.
That was a bitterly cold night in Omaha, Nebraska. Tens of thousands showed up. President Trump stopped speaking at 9 o'clock, and then the event wasn't completely cleared out until midnight, so some people had to stand out in the cold.
So that's the president's fault? I mean, come on. I mean, that's the ground people in Nebraska should have figured that out. Not the president. That's not his fault.
He was long gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was a busing issue. They couldn't get the buses there, but whatever. Early voting problems in the city continue. Long lines, long waits continuing. And the mayor says the Board of Elections has got to go.
It's arcane. It's from literally another century. It was built for another time. It was built on the wrong concepts for what we need today.
Okay, the mayor also reportedly working to block the sale of the Mets to billionaire Steve Cohen. De Blasio has oversight over Citi Field as the mayor. New York Post says he's told baseball commissioner Rob Manfred he won't let the deal go through. He is using an insider trading guilty plea by Cohen's former hedge fund as the reason to stop it. Well, we're expecting some pretty good economic news today, Len. GDP growth for the third quarter comes out this morning. I know you always like these economic reports. Analysts are forecasting unprecedented growth of more than 30%. And that's following a 31.5% drop in the second quarter. So we'd be back to even if this thing pans out. So
did you mention the market tanking 900 and something points yesterday? Or you left that out because it doesn't make the president look good?
No, I mean, I only have a certain amount of time here. I can't give you everything, Len. Okay.
Oh, sure. It's funny how you bring the good. It's funny how you say Len when you got the good economic news, but okay, go ahead.
You want the bad economic news or what?
Well, I'm just making a point that you seem to have a little agenda there, but that's okay, Joey. No problem.
The futures are pointing to a higher start this morning, Len. Our news brought to you by National Realty. Learn the insider method of obtaining 18 to 21% targeted returns on prime building locations. Real quickly, what's America's favorite Halloween candy?
Don't tell me that crappy corn.
No, peanut butter cups. No.
Cats. Twix.
Kit Kat?
No.
Snickers.
No one's got it. Reese's peanut butter cups, number one.
Really?
That's number one. That's my favorite.
I'm never a big fan of those. I don't know.
Well, that's figures.
You're never it does
figure.
With the mainstream. Of course. They're fabulous.
He likes
what's
that.
What's your favorite? Let's see where you are on the list.
I bought an entire bag of them, too. So. Yeah.
I kind of like candy kisses, but that's just...
Oh, God.
Well, they're not even on there. Not even on the top. That's Len.
What is on there?
Not with the mainstream. All right, real quickly. Reese's number one, number two, M&M's, three Kit Kats. Snickers is four. Hershey bars are five.
Well, those are good. I like M&M peanuts and Hershey. Well, Hershey's kisses. That's Hershey bars. All right, thanks, Joey B. I still don't like Reese's peanut butter cups. When we get back... Are they a sponsor, by the way? I hope not. When we get back, the former governor of New York... David Patterson, he's always insightful. We'll have his take on the presidential race next.
And Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning. It's what a New York morning is supposed to sound like.
710 WOR.
And Michael has the morning off. Noam Layden is here. And we're joined now by our buddy, Governor David Patterson, former governor of New York, also author of the brand new book, Black, Blind, and in Charge, a story of visionary leadership and overcoming adversity. Well, Gov, I just can't believe it's only 5 days until Election Day. So no beating around the bush. Don't give me some political answer. What's going to happen Tuesday?
I think that the most important state for a Republican running for president is Ohio. The Republican has to win Ohio. I think the president will win Ohio. Then we'll come to the state that I think that will actually decide the election, and it's the same old state. It's Florida. Now, if Florida is very close and the president ekes out Florida, there's still a pathway for Biden, as there was in 2016 for Hillary. But I think it, right now I call this race too close to call, and I have for a while back, even though I thought that the president would win, as you know, for the past several months.
Do you think we'll know on election night who's won, or is it going to take a while?
I think we'll probably know on election night who's won. This is what I think is interesting about the president right now is that the media says that he's downplaying the virus. Well, downplaying the virus in the sense of what the response should be, but he talks about the virus all the time. So if he's at his rallies yelling COVID, 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 and if you vote for Biden, there's going to be no Christmas, there's going to be no Thanksgiving, there's no July 4th. Well, we had no July 4th anyway because of the virus earlier in the year. If I were advising him, I would tell him, if you want to downplay the virus and stop talking about it, talk about the economy, talk about the ways in which everything was a lot better than it had been until the virus struck. The virus wasn't his fault. And as he pointed out in his own debate, it's not Biden's fault. But to get an idea of what it would be like to live in this country without a virus, his first term would be the best thing to talk about. But he continues to beat the drum about the virus.
Well, here's the soundbite you're referencing, David.
If you vote for Biden, it means no kids in school, no graduations, no weddings, no Thanksgiving, no Christmas, and no 4th of July together. Other than that, you have a wonderful life.
Well, there you go. No July 4th, have a wonderful life, David Patterson.
Well, see, the counter to that is, but you have a life. In other words, the spike that is occurring right now is largely in part that we didn't hold the line after we had pushed the virus back significantly in the months of August and September. And the virus is coming back, and he doesn't really have an answer for that. So what I'm saying is, then if you want to get reelected and you don't want to change your policy about the virus, then just don't talk about it. Talk about how things are going to be when we get past this, as opposed to the kind of taunting that I think too many Americans are. They're not only tired of the virus, but they're tired of the taunting.
You know, one of the juicier things in your new memoir, Black, Blind, and in Charge, was, of course, you were lieutenant governor when Elliot Spitzer was governor. And, of course, he got caught up in this hooker scandal. And the day he was set to resign, he never called to tell you that he was going to resign, did he?
No, he didn't. And no one had called me until an hour and 10 minutes before he was going to resign. And what happened, if you remember this, Noam, is that his wife was got really upset and forbid him to resign. And they could not get her to stand in front of the camera while he tried to resign. They waited another 2 days. At one point, he said he was coming back. He was going to go to therapy. Nobody in the legislature thought much of that. And then he finally resigned. So it was a very sticky period because when they told me, I asked them, what should I do? And they said, why don't you write down some notes, which is in an hour we're going to call your inauguration speech.
Wow. Now, so who did call you eventually?
Eventually, Richard Baum, who was the secretary to the governor, that's the chief of staff, in effect, called me. He called me from the governor's bathroom because he kept telling the governor, if you're going to resign, we have to tell the lieutenant governor. Then he he said, stop worrying about him. We'll just give him something to read. And he said, but he doesn't read. He memorizes things. You're giving him no time to prepare himself.
So that's finally, hilarious.
It's true. And finally, Baum on his own decided that, you know what? If this guy becomes governor and I'm still the secretary, the first thing he's going to do is ream me out about why he has to make a speech, inauguration speech, and he has no material.
And they're calling you from the bathroom. All right, Governor David Patterson, sounds like a great book, Black, Blind, and in Charge, a story of visionary leadership and overcoming adversity. We'll talk to you next week, David. Thanks a lot.
Okay, I'll see you Tuesday, Noam.
See you Tuesday.
That's right. That's right. Governor Patterson will be part of our election coverage. Joe Bartlett and Noam Layden are co-anchoring, and we're all calling in. I'm calling in. Michael Riedel is. All the people on our staff, including the governor, and should be a big night here on 710 WOR. When we return, Anonymous is anonymous no more. And the president is not happy about it. And 8:05, we'll talk to our buddy, Long Island Congressman Peter King.
Len Berman and Michael Riedel in the morning
on 710 WOR.
Well, it's just one of the many stories that came and went, but it was a big deal at the time, or it seemed that way. This was back in 2018. A guy called himself Anonymous, and he wrote an op-ed page in the Times saying he was part of the resistance. He worked in the administration and was part of the resistance against Donald Trump, and then he eventually wrote a book, and there was all kinds of speculation of who this guy was. It turns out his name is Miles Taylor, and he was a former Homeland Security official, so he wasn't exactly, sitting in the cabinet.
No, but he was a nobody and a coward, by the way, at the same time. And the fact that he had to go under the guise of this op-ed as anonymous. I mean, if you're really upset about what's going on in the White House, and step forward and let people know. I mean, I don't understand that whole thing of hiding behind anonymous. I mean, that's cowardice.
Well, I guess he didn't want to lose his job, but he went on CNN back then when he was known as anonymous before he was known as Miles Taylor, and he was on with Anderson Cooper, and Anderson Cooper asked him outright if he knew who Anonymous was, and Taylor said no, and Chris Cuomo tried to hold his feet to the fire last night when Miles Taylor went on CNN with Cuomo.
You lied to us, Miles. You were asked in August if you were Anonymous here on CNN with Anderson Cooper, and you said no. Now, why should CNN keep you on the payroll after lying like that?
Chris, it's a great question, and I'll just give you the blunt truth. When I published a warning, I said in the book that if asked, I would strenuously deny I was the author.
Well, so that's his excuse that he wrote in the book. But he says he does owe Anderson Cooper an apology.
I owe Anderson Cooper a beer. I owe him a mea culpa. And the same thing for other reporters who at that time period asked me, are you anonymous? And I said no, because I wanted that work to stand on its own two legs and deprive the president of an opportunity to do one more personal attack to distract from his record. But look, I'm here tonight to say that was me. And I hope people challenge me on those accounts.
And they should. They should. Again, if you think there's something so vitally wrong going on in the White House, come out as yourself and say so people see who you are. All this time, this is like one of a thousand of these stories that end up being absolutely nothing, right? And now we find out he was really a nobody in the White House, like so many of these other people who've gone to the press. And another non-story, another way to bash the president. And of course, no surprise here, Len, he's on the CNN payroll now. They're paying him to be a contributor because he's another Trump basher.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, he wasn't in the White House, so he really wasn't even that close. He was, part of Homeland Security. And, no, I could see that. If you know him, if you were really upset with WOR and you wanted to make your feelings known to the local media, you're not going to say who you are because you know that that'll be the end of your career at WOR.
Well, speaking of which, no.
Don't go there.
Come on. Let's hear it.
Yeah. There wasn't this is going to work really well for you, though. Yeah, let's move on.
There wasn't enough zeros on my paycheck last week. I just want to point that out.
All right. Well, yeah. join the club. Yeah. The president obviously is a real fan of Anonymous.
Anonymous turned out to be a low-level staffer, a sleazebag, who's never worked in the White House.
A sleazebag. Oh, tell us more, Donald.
Anonymous was a nobody, a disgruntled employee who was quickly removed from his job a long time ago for, they tell me, incompetence. I don't know what for, but they tell me incompetence. You know where he works now? He works at CNN.
Yeah. And, of course, cutting anti-Trump ads. No surprise there. So, you got to take the source, and it's not a great source. A bad
one. There must be more. Any more, Mr. President?
This is a low-level lowlife that I don't know. I have no idea who he is other than I got to see him a little while ago on television, and I think they threw him out a long time ago.
Well, I don't know. But anyway, there you go. Now you got Mr. Anonymous. But, how many books have been written, and how many have come and gone? I mean, I think we even had Omarosa on this radio show when she wrote a book, and whatever happened to that book. I don't know. Who hasn't written a book?
Yeah, well, you would think the people at Simon & Schuster are hoping that the president gets another 4 years. Same with the people at CNN and Fox and MSNBC, because he's, you know, he's made them a lot of money over the last 4 years and will with another 4 years.
Are you saying that Joe Biden's not going to drive the ratings for the big cable networks?
No.
Is that what you're trying to tell me?
No, you can't drive the ratings from the basement of the White House. Not going to happen.
Well, but aren't you people on the right convinced that Kamala Harris will be the president within 6 months?
Yeah, well, they're both going to have their hand on the Bible if they get that far. They'll both have their hand on the Bible taking the oath on January 20th if Biden wins, because everybody knows he's not running the show. He hasn't been running the campaign. So she will be running the show among a group of others, I'm sure, in the White House.
See, I don't know if I buy that argument. That's what you guys love to say on the right, that he's not calling anything.
Where's he been?
He's a puppet on a string.
Where is he?
He was in Delaware yesterday.
You're right.
He's going home. To Florida today.
He was at home.
Going to Florida.
He's been home most of this campaign. He's been at home. That tells you everything. He's not out and about with the people. He's home.
Okay, well, he doesn't want to spread the coronavirus.
No, other people are running
the
president. Show. Other people are running the show. That's why
I don't
he's
know
home.
If that's true.
Yes, of All course right. it is.
Alrighty then, when we return, we've got Long Island Congressman Peter King joining us. He hasn't been on for a while, and he's in the last days of his run in Congress. We'll see what he has to think. Maybe he's getting out at the right time. Plus, we want you to stick around because you have another chance to win $1,000, and that's coming up right after the news. It's 8 o'clock.